Here's something to think about. People under the age of 38 have only experienced one presidential election in this country that didn't feature a Bush or a Clinton running for president or vice president.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
I said we'd cut the deficit in half in 4 years. We cut it by 60%.
This is a remarkable moment in the life of our nation. Never has the promise of prosperity been so vivid.
Is a fight for the future, and it's a fight we must win together.
Highlights of some presidential elections over the last few decades. Well, with the news this week that Jeb Bush is actively exploring a presidential bid and Hillary Clinton is expected to run again, let's bring in George Edwards. He's a presidential scholar and professor of political science at Texas A&M, and he joins us from KAMU in College Station. Professor, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Well, what do you think it says about us as a country that we may indeed have another election that features a Bush and a Clinton?
Well, I think there are several interesting aspects of this. First is that if you have famous parents or famous relatives or famous husband, you have an advantage in politics. First of all, the name recognition is very important. And normally, someone who wants to run for president has to spend a lot of time and a lot of money just getting known as an entity, get people to know that they actually exist. If Jeb Bush were named Jeb Smith and were a successful governor of Florida, he'd have a much more difficult time than he will have now as Jeb Bush. Similarly, Hillary Clinton, if she were Hillary Smith and not married to the president of the United States, would not have had the launch pad into the Senate race in New York. And after that, of course, she was on her own. She was a successful senator and then Secretary of State, so she was able to establish her own identity.
So name recognition helps, but
absolutely,
we didn't want a monarchy. Isn't that the whole point of our system, is that anyone can make it? That's the American dream.
Well, that's certainly the American dream, and to some extent, it's certainly true. But another advantage of being well-known and being well-connected is being able to raise money, and that's certainly the mother's milk of politics. It's certainly key today, and if you are part of a dynasty, you have a built-in advantage in raising funds, and that is very, very important. And there's probably also some residual political organization out there that is composed of people who helped your relatives, who have family loyalties, and that also gives you an extra push up the ladder.
But does it depress you that that's where we are?
It doesn't depress me if people are competent, and I think in this instance, Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush are two very competent people.
But there may be a lot of people who are competent who aren't named Clinton or Bush.
That's certainly true. There are plenty of competent people, and it's just a fact of life that some people have an advantage over other people. I don't think there's much we could do about that.
What are the disadvantages, if any, of being part of a political dynasty?
Well, there may be baggage. Let's take Jeb Bush's case. His father, and I have great respect for his father, but his father was defeated in his effort to be reelected. His brother left office under a cloud because of a mishandled war in Iraq and, of course, the onset of the Great Recession. So those aren't happy days, and needless to say, he will not be wanting to emphasize those aspects of his family's political history. So there's baggage there. In Hillary Clinton's case, there was so much demonization of Bill Clinton and also some of her over the years, and of course, particularly in the 1990s, that there's a lot of people who will just look at her as the Wicked Witch of the North or something, and she's going to find it more difficult to break through to those people because of that baggage.
So do you think then it's a net positive or a net negative to be part of the dynasty?
I think it's a net positive. Many of the people who don't like you, would never consider supporting you, would never support someone of your party anyhow. So that's really not much of a loss. On the other hand, the name recognition, the access to the absolutely necessary funds, and political organization are all great advantages in politics.
Now, as we said, in the last few decades, we've only had one election in which there was not a Clinton or a Bush in the mix at all. And we've had a couple of elections where a Clinton or a Bush was not on the national ticket in the end. And the one that I'm thinking of is 2008. Of course, Hillary Clinton ran against Barack Obama but lost in the primary. And when he ran against John McCain, the turnout was record. Doesn't that tell you that the country is more interested in hearing from new people than voting for people that they know pretty well?
Well, I'm not sure that I would reach that conclusion. Certainly, there's some variation in turnout, and I think Barack Obama was able to inspire a lot of people to get to the polls, and particularly people who normally don't vote, and that's younger people and minorities who vote at a much lower rate than other people. But I'm not sure that we should view that as a rejection of well-known names or of Hillary Clinton. I think if Hillary Clinton is on the ticket, for example, that this will be quite inspirational to many women.
Yeah.
Since she is a viable candidate to be the first female president of the United States.
Well, do you think then that we just go in these waves? Sometimes we want to hear from somebody new, and sometimes we want a good old standby that we know.
Well, I'm not sure if it's the new versus the old. Certainly there are times when we just want change. But I think in this instance, we have two people who are very competent who have emerged at least to be viable candidates for their party's nomination. There's a long way to go, and I don't think we should assume anything as far as them winning the nomination. They'll be a very difficult fight. Certainly Jeb Bush will have many opponents, and he is not in the center of the Republican Party, so there'll be a challenge for him. I think he's probably up to the challenge, but it will be a challenge.
Now, you're a presidential scholar, so I want to ask you, let's go back to the other examples of this in history, John Quincy Adams and John Adams, and then the cousins Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt and FDR. Is there anything that Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton can learn from either of those cases in terms of managing a political dynasty to their benefit?
Well, John Quincy Adams did not have a happy presidency. Actually, John Adams didn't have a happy presidency either, and of course was defeated for re-election, as was his son, John Quincy Adams. So there's nothing that you can assume. You can't assume success.
Do you think John Quincy Adams could have been elected without John Adams having been president?
Well, I think that John Quincy Adams' initial connection to government and a dedication to public service certainly was related strongly to the fact that his father was one of the founders of the nation. But John Quincy Adams was also an extremely competent person and had very substantial experience, diplomatic experience, and was very dedicated to public service. Indeed, after he left the presidency, he became famous for fighting the good fight because he was elected to the House of Representatives.
Right.
We wouldn't expect presidents to step down, so to speak, and did, and was fought slavery until literally till the day he died.
George Edwards, a presidential scholar and professor of political science at Texas A&M University. Professor Edwards, thanks for speaking with us.
My pleasure.